This season, we're launching a new episode of The Missing every week. But if you don't want to wait, all episodes are currently available completely ad-free on What's the Story Crime. Signing up is really easy. Just follow the link in our show notes. You're guaranteed to find your new favourite true crime listen. From con men to missing people, forensic investigations to miscarriages of justice, What's the Story Crime is the home for all true crime fans who want bingeable, addictive, crime-based content.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Missing is produced by What's the Story Sounds. They also make lots of other great content, which I think you might like. Why not sign up for What's the Story Crime? On there, you'll find series including The Missing completely ad-free, as well as bonus content and even entire series you can't hear elsewhere. Signing up is super easy. Just search for What's the Story Crime in Apple Podcasts or follow the link in our show notes to get access on whatever platform you prefer to listen on. All the information is also available on www.whatsthestorysounds.com/crime. Many of us dream about doing something life-altering or truly adventurous. Quit that job, take that trip, move to that country. Sam Heslop was all about adventure. The 41-year-old couldn't bear the thought of spending 40 hours a week in an office chained to her desk, and so she'd opted for a life of discovery. She travelled all over the world and made friends everywhere she went. In the spring of 2021, Sam found herself working on a catamaran on St. John in the US Virgin Islands. She was working as the boat's chef, while her partner was the boat's captain. One night, whilst moored at the harbour, the pair went ashore for dinner and drinks. They were captured on CCTV, heading in the direction of the dinghy that would take them back to the catamaran. But a short while later, in the early hours of the morning, on March the 8th, the police received a panicked phone call saying that Sam had vanished. That CCTV footage, taken from the harbour, would be the last anyone saw of Sam.
I'm Pandora Sykes, and you're listening to The Missing, a What's the Story original podcast series brought to you with the help of the charities Missing People and Locate International. They believe that all of the cases in this series could still be solved.
This is The Missing, Sam Heslop. One of Brenda Street's early memories of her daughter, Sam, is watching her perform in a parade in the town of Hoddesdon, Hertfordshire, in the southeast of England, where Sam was born and raised.
She was animated. She would take part in everything going. She loved ballet, tap. She was in the Brownies. She won medals at swimming in school. She just loved to take part. She was a majorette.
A majorette is a baton twirler who performs intricate moves while dancing, marching, or performing gymnastics. It requires a great deal of athletic ability and strong hand-eye coordination.
She started when she was around 6 years old, and she got a first season there. She received the biggest trophy going. Yeah, so they do parades in carnivals, twirling their batons, all dressed up in their uniforms.
Sam was an enthusiastic and intelligent kid. After graduating secondary school, Sam began attending Hartford Regional College, where she studied travel and tourism. It was there that she met Andrew.
So met when we were 16 and really hit it off pretty much instantaneously and were friends ever since.
Sam had a deeply felt sense of adventure and was dying to spread her wings and see what life outside Hertfordshire had to offer.
Sam absolutely, you know, was in travel, wanted to see the world, travel, which she did, which she fulfilled that wish and travelled a lot.
She went to Australia probably 3 or 4 times because her brother lives out there and she's got a niece out there, my granddaughter. She went to Barbados, she went to America.
Sam was a subscriber to the work to live school of thought. Jobs were a means to an end. She'd stick with them just until she had enough money to get her to the next destination.
She did work in a travel agent's for a while, but she didn't like sitting at her desk. She liked to be out there doing stuff. So she would pick up any type of job, waitressing, working at a call center, just to be able to save money to travel. But then she did settle down for a little while and she worked for the airline in Southampton as an air stewardess.
In 2002, Sam joined Andrew in Southampton, where he was working in the cruise industry.
We spent loads of time together in that. That was kind of probably a real moment in time where I went, oh yeah, this is a friend that I'm going to have forever.
Sam had always been someone that people felt naturally drawn to.
Everyone loved having her in their life and spending time with her. She's kind of one of those people that you always wanted to spend time with. I don't think you could ever describe Sam as quiet or introverted. Definitely an extrovert. To her friends, you know, to the people that she knew really well, she was more extroverted. Probably less so with people that she didn't know, but she was always someone that was kind of the centre of what was going on. Always wanting to be involved, always wanting to have a good time, always kind of that person that would always light up a room and bring energy.
Working as a stewardess afforded Sam the ability to travel the world. It's also where she met one of her best friends, Vicky, and Brenda recalls that the pair shared one particularly hair-raising flight together.
Sam had been working on Flybe for a few months and then Vicky joined and they were on a flight together and they had a prisoner. They had a prisoner and 2 prison officers on the plane and Vicky was panicking a bit. Sam's like, oh, it's all right. And Vicky said, but the officers, they've gone to sleep and he's trying to get his hands out the handcuffs. Sam was, yeah, I'll sit opposite. It'll all be fine. If the prisoner had got his hands out the handcuffs, she wouldn't have, you know, she would have just opened the door and let him out. I'm not confronting him type thing. Oh, well, whatever. That's not my problem.
Sam continued working for the airline for several years, but she grew tired of trying to cram her travel into the brief windows of respite between flights.
She worked in Gibraltar for a while, a Wagamama. As a waitress, and I went out twice to see her there and spent time with her.
Then, in 2019, Sam figured out her next move, and it was a big one.
A friend of hers, Kate, and her boyfriend, Martin, who live in Portsmouth now. Martin is from Switzerland, and he had a boat, a yacht. So they decided they're going to travel to the Caribbean across the Atlantic. Now, Sam's always up for an adventure, as I said, and Kate asked her, would she like to come along? And Sam's like, well, why didn't you ask me earlier? You know, definitely.
Sam didn't have any sailing experience, which freaked her friends and family out a little.
Yeah, I remember her telling me, and I remember her coming around shortly afterwards, and we were talking about it, and there was kind of me going, "You're crazy. Why would you do that with no training?" And her going, "Well, you know, you never have any training unless you start."
Brenda remembers all too well the last meal she shared with her daughter.
She was coming up to her 40th birthday on the 19th of December. So we went out for dinner, and because it's coming up Christmas, there was Christmas crackers. So, and she loved Guinness, as I do. And I've got a picture of her sitting with her paper hat on, a plastic moustache and a pint of Guinness. So that was our meal. My husband worked early and she had an early flight. So he took her to the airport, so I said goodbye at the door.
Sam celebrated her 40th birthday at sea.
And they had all balloons and banners and silly presents for her. She sent me the pictures of that.
They sailed across the Atlantic to Cape Verde, off the west coast of Africa. The journey would take them a couple of weeks, during which they wouldn't be able to contact their loved ones. To say Brenda was stressed during this time would be putting it lightly.
She told me it would be about 21 days. So, of course, I'm frantic for 21 days.
Sam and her friends completed the first stage successfully and recuperated for a while at Cape Verde before starting the next leg of their journey, a 4,000-kilometre sail to Antigua. By the time they arrived there, the COVID-19 pandemic meant that entering the Caribbean country had suddenly gotten a lot more complicated.
And I had to spend 2 weeks, I think it was 2 weeks, on the yacht, not being allowed to go on land, only at a certain time to try and get a visa to land there, to make inquiries to go ashore. And of course she messaged me then, yeah, great, I've got the visa, we've all got the visa, now we can get on to Antigua, onto the island. And then she was locked down in Antigua for 3 months, and I'm like, oh, poor you. Anyway, they ended up then in St. Thomas in the Caribbean, which is part of the US Virgin Islands, where she met Bain.
Ryan Bain was an American in his 40s, based in St. John, who made his living taking punters out on his 47-foot catamaran called Siren Song.
What's that dating site? Tinder. She was on there, and so she met him and she stayed with him on his yacht, and they just like backwards and forwards onto the island and just whatever they were doing, paddleboarding, snorkeling, and just whatever couples do.
Sam and Ryan were together on and off for almost 8 months. At one point, unsure of what she wanted, Sam went to Malta on her own to spend time with a few friends.
She didn't know what she was going to do. And then she messaged me after a couple of weeks. She messaged me to say that he's constantly messaging her, saying he wanted to come back. He wanted her to work on the boat and he would pay her. And she would be, I suppose, well, I say chef, but not a chef really, just a cook. And so she flew back to him. She actually flew to Barbados and she had to stay there for 15 nights to be able to fly then. That was, you know, in isolation. And she was able then to fly to St. John, where he was meeting her. And the date, and I'll never forget it, the date was the 14th of February, Valentine's Day. And I messaged her to say, I hope he bought you something nice. Flowers or chocolates or something. And that's when she arrived and she went back.
Sam didn't have much cooking experience, but like everything else in life, she threw herself into her new role with enthusiasm.
She was not a cook. She didn't like cooking. I think the best thing she ever made was a chili, and she always made a chili, whether you were in hot weather or not. So she sent me pictures of the food that she was making, you know, with mango and like exotic looking food, small sort of like plates of it, then which she would serve up to the people chartering the yacht.
Sam kept her family and friends up to date with her latest endeavour until eventually, one day in March 2021, Andrew received a panicked phone call from Kate.
I vividly remember it. I was sat in my office at home. My wife was sat in one of the kids' bedrooms working, and kind of the phone rang and it was Kate. And, you know, just with the simple words, Sam's gone missing. Part of the work I do kind of, I deal with kind of different events and crises on cruise ships. So kind of I was like, right, explain to me what missing means. And she went on to explain that she'd, the day before that she, Ryan Bain had woken up and she wasn't on the boat, and kind of they'd been working for the day to try and find her, and I said, what's going on? Initially, I went into quite work mode, trying to establish some facts. I immediately had a conversation with Ryan Bain on that first day to try and understand from him what was happening, what was going on.
Later that day, Brenda's phone rang. It was an unknown number, and she decided to ignore it.
I don't answer calls with a number I don't recognise. If there are people I want to speak to, they'll be in my contacts. So I ignored the call, and then I had a message sent to me saying, this is Ryan, Sam's boyfriend, please ring me.
Brenda called Ryan back, and he told her that Sam was missing. He said that they had gone out for dinner on the night of March the 7th. They took a small dinghy from the Siren Song to the harbour at Franks Bay and then ate at a local pub called 420 to Centre. At 10 p.m. that night, due to COVID-related restrictions, they left the pub, got back on the dinghy and returned to the catamaran. There, they watched Netflix together until Ryan fell asleep. When he woke up at 2 a.m, Ryan says that Sam wasn't by his side. He searched the boat for her, calling out her name, but he couldn't find her anywhere. Then Ryan realised why he'd woken up. The boat's anchor alarm had gone off. The sensor is triggered by movement.
Her phone was still there, her purse was still there, her passport was still there. And he said that she must have fallen overboard.
Ryan thought that perhaps she had gone out for a cigarette and slipped. He checked the water around the Siren Song, and seeing nothing, he phoned the police. After that phone call, Brenda was understandably overcome with emotion.
I just fell apart. I just fell apart, just the worst nightmare ever. And I remember I got a little workshop down the bottom of the garden, and where I do all my little arts and crafts, and I just went down there, and there was a tin of paint on the floor, and I kicked it, and all the paint went everywhere. And I sat there numb, and that's how I felt, just numb.
Over the next few days, Sam's family and friends began to piece together the information about what had happened that night. One detail in particular struck them as very odd. When Ryan had spoken to the police had given him one specific instruction.
They told him to ring the Coast Guard, but he didn't ring the Coast Guard for over 11 hours later.
I can't wrap my head around if you were worried enough to call the police and go and speak to the police in the middle of the night. Why would you then not be worried enough to call the Coast Guard? What's the difference? You've already called an authority. So why would you not call the authority that I would say is responsible for the water?
Ryan's story suggested that Sam had fallen into the water and drowned.
Well, if you look at the configuration of that boat and the layout, there's kind of a, I want to say there's like a cockpit lounge area that's quite gated from the back of the boat. So you'd have to be pretty much leaning out the side of the boat or going down some steps to get to somewhere where you could fall in. The more and more I look and the more and more I kind of try and understand how you would fall in, I struggle.
In the bay where the Siren Song had dropped anchor, there were two other occupied boats moored nearby. How had no one aboard those vessels heard anything that night? Not Sam going overboard, not her struggling in the water, not even the anchor alarm.
And that's probably the thing that kind of alarms us all about. That would have been a really, really difficult to fall in the first place. And if you had managed to fall in, if you were able to walk up on deck and have a cigarette, if you're able to do that, then then I don't see how you would then not be able to swim or to shout.
Furthermore, Sam was a strong swimmer, and the siren song was only 150 metres from shore.
She was a good swimmer. She did safety kind of from when she was a flight attendant. She'd done safety when she was doing her yacht training. It wouldn't have been that deep.
Another thing that's long troubled the family is, why didn't Ryan try to contact the other boats to see if they'd seen anything?
My thing at the time when we were all talking about this in the beginning was, why the hell did he not scream and shout and draw attention to himself or even let off a flare?
You also might wonder why the police advised Ryan to call the Coast Guard instead of just doing it themselves. Brenda had the same query.
They forgot to do it. I asked the question. We went over on the first anniversary and we had a meeting with the police, and that was my question. I actually didn't know at the time. I did say to him, look, you know, you need to change your policies. If somebody else went in the water, you need to, and they, or somebody's reported missing, you need to phone the Coast Guard. And he looked down at his desk. He looked, because I made sure I sat right next to him so I could read his body language. And he looked up at me and he said, that was our fault. We forgot to do it. That's what he told me. I just started crying. I couldn't believe it.
At around 11:45 on the morning of March the 8th, Ryan called the Coast Guard and the search for Sam began in earnest. The police began with a visit to the siren song.
When the Coast Guard first arrived, he let them walk through the cabin. But by law, they're not allowed to open a door and look inside. They can only just go through the main structure of the yacht. They did go back again. And I think at that time, the first time the Coast Guard went, I think the police were with them as well. And they just walked through the yacht, not able to open the door, which begs the question, why didn't he let them search the boat and prove that she wasn't there? They went back a second time, the Coast Guard. I don't know if it was that day or the next day. And he, I think it was that day, that he wouldn't allow them. He blocked them from going through the boat at the main door after you're on the deck and then you go through the main bit.
As the master of that boat, he denied them permission to search the boat.
He blocked them and he was agitated and he was very drunk. And we were told by one of the neighbouring yachts that he didn't go out to search for her. He didn't go out at all. Not even in the beginning, he didn't. He stayed on the yacht and he drank tequila.
Despite Sam's family and friends' feelings about Ryan's actions in the immediate aftermath of Sam's disappearance, police haven't found any evidence that he's responsible. Meanwhile, the waters around the boat and harbour were being searched from the skies.
They had a local man who had a drone and he volunteered to scan over the area. The Coast Guard was out. They went out to as far as they could and as far as it would have been had she drifted anywhere, and they had divers in the main area, and they found absolutely nothing.
Here's a cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact: you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, Brenda was over 4,000 miles away, and all of this was happening in the middle of a global lockdown.
There's nothing I can do. What can I do? It's so far away. We couldn't fly out. We couldn't go over there because of the restrictions. We weren't allowed.
Brenda was finding it very difficult to get updates on her daughter's case.
We had to push for the police to give us any information. The first call I had from the police was from a constable called Shanika Simon. And she had this great big long form for me to answer questions to about, you know, any identifying marks. Did she have a false leg? Did she, you know, how was her hearing? Did she have hearing aids and all this? That went on for about 10 minutes. Goodness knows why they asked me that, because they asked me several other questions, all being the same, you know, the same questions again and again.
Andrew did his best to apply pressure from his side and get information flowing more freely.
In the beginning, those kind of, in those very early stages, yeah, I was probably kind of the point person in the UK for kind of understanding what was going on. Obviously, trying to gather resources around what we could do and what was happening, and you know, I was having conversations with contacts I had from, you know, and talking to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and kind of try and get assistance at their end and trying to just understand what was happening in terms of the search and, you know, what had been done or what was being done in those early days, which was quite fragmented. You know, what was happening from the official's perspective? What were the police doing? What were the, you know, what was happening from a search perspective? You know, was it a land search, a sea search? You know, what were some of those things that were going on? And it was, yeah, very, very fragmented. I didn't get the feeling that there was a joined up plan.
But getting concrete information from the police was like getting blood from a stone.
I was advised just to leave it to the Hampshire police. And we were dealing with the Foreign Office as well. So a guy there, he was working on our behalf. I didn't want to cross what they were saying, so I just relied on information from them. But they weren't getting anything either. We've just hit brick walls. Every which way we've turned, we've hit brick walls.
Then seemingly, out of the blue, some CCTV footage was recovered.
And then they suddenly produced this, I think because we were badgering them at the time.
The footage shows Sam and Ryan walking from the bar where they'd had dinner to the dock where the dinghy they had used to get ashore was moored.
We saw a few paces and walking along the dock, and just about, there's a couple of steps down to the dinghy dock. It's just a platform that sticks out in the ocean, just, I don't know how long, how far, 10 metres, 10 feet, I'm not sure. And they stopped it just as they were stepping down onto the steps, and they stopped it there.
To the best of Brenda's knowledge, that's the only footage from the night of Sam's disappearance that exists.
Apparently the CCTV camera in the 420 Dissenter wasn't working, and we were told in the beginning that there was no CCTV at all, anywhere.
Later, it emerged that someone walking along the beach that night had heard something.
Apparently at the time, a man walking his dog on the beach heard a scream.
Could this have been Sam? The information was relayed to the police, but nothing came of it in the end. As with any disappearance like this, difficult questions had to be asked. Could Sam have wanted to disappear? Or, worse, might she have taken her own life?
Sam, you know, live life to the full and really exuberant, did, you know, lots of crazy stuff in a really good way. But she, that wasn't her. You know, that immediately I went, that's not Sam. She wouldn't, for 24 hours, she wouldn't, that isn't something she would do, just not be in contact with someone for 24 hours.
Back in the UK, unable to travel to the site itself, Andrew, along with Sam's family and friends, were coordinating a media strategy, hoping that if they could generate enough press attention, it would force the authorities to take Sam's disappearance more seriously.
You know, we had a media campaign. That's the best I can call it. We sat down and we said, look, how are we going to engage the media and give them statements? And, you know, we very quickly kind of went to, look, we need to start issuing press statements. We need to start talking to contacts that can get us into media outlets, be they kind of papers or TV or radio. And, you know, and it kind of become a job, a second job, to kind of go, look, we need to keep Sam's name out there, because as soon as people stop talking about it, then it's just going to disappear. I think we've done pretty well. I think we've been, you know, we, again, great group of people and great group of people advising us as well from different people's contacts, and to kind of go, look, you know, we've got to keep this story going. How are we going to keep that name, keep our name out there?
And their hard work was paying off.
As we tried to bring media pressure to bear, the updates were kind of more regular. We're getting more information. Well, we're searching here, we're searching there. And, you know, I remember one of the papers kind of got Coast Guard, kind of Freedom of Information Act for the Coast Guard information, which was really pivotal to what happened that night.
It's one thing to get press attention in the immediate aftermath of a disappearance. It's another entirely to keep someone's name in the public eye for months and even years after they go missing.
Yeah, I think we know, look, you know, there's a lot of stories out there, right? There's a lot of people that go missing. There's a lot of competition for the news. And, you know, we know there's only a finite period of time where, you know, you can say the same things about any new news and new line. So we're constantly trying to think about what that looks like.
As the flurry of publicity around Sam's case mounted, the spotlight was shone on everyone involved, including Ryan Bain. The press revealed he had previously been arrested on suspicion of domestic violence. In 2011, when married to his now ex-wife, he allegedly threw her to the floor, chipping her tooth, and spent 21 days in jail after pleading guilty to the assault. As the press dug deeper into his personal life, Ryan hired the lawyer, David Catty, who famously represented the notorious child trafficker, Ghislaine Maxwell. In March 2022, days before the first anniversary of her daughter's disappearance, Brenda, accompanied by Sam's father Peter, made her way to the Virgin Islands, stopping en route in Miami.
And we were met airside by the consul, British consul in Miami, a lady, and the vice consul, and the security of the airport, and the manager of the airport. They were all there airside. So as soon as we come up that ramp, they were there. Felt like royalty then, so it was quite nice. Made me smile.
From Miami, they travelled to St. John, an island about 20 square miles in size, with a population just shy of 4,000 people.
It's not huge, but apparently across the other side of the island where we didn't go is where the rich people live, all big, you know, colonial houses on the hills and all forests. There's a big forestry national park, takes up half the island, the back of the island. But we went over, I wanted to go over and see where she'd gone missing from.
They met with the authorities there and were shown the CCTV footage from the night in question.
It didn't stop at a certain point. The police officer switched it off at a certain point, and I asked to see it twice more, and she switched it off at the same place. Now, at the time, I was distraught seeing it. So I never even thought about saying, well, can you just leave it on? I want to see the rest. I just didn't. even think about it, nor did her father, because we were really upset. And we've asked for the CCTV to be released to us, giving all sorts of reasons that, you know, we might be able to see something they haven't seen, something, especially as it's somebody that we know so well, that we could have seen body language signs of something, you know, but we weren't allowed to see it, and it wouldn't be released. Now, he said when she went missing, she was wearing a black dress. The CCTV showed me that she had a short sleeve top on, and it was either a little skirt or shorts. So what she was wearing was not what he said she was wearing at the time she went missing. Now, she wouldn't have gone back to the yacht and have changed. She wouldn't have done that. If she was feeling tired, she probably would have laid down on the bed and just gone to sleep with her clothes on. There's so many bits that just don't add up. They told us bits and pieces and what they're doing, and they're, you know, sticking up flyers and speaking to the locals, and they had done the searches, and, you know, and they're doing as much as they can. And but as I say, I mentioned to them about the Coast Guard. I also mentioned to them, is it possible that there was trafficking? She's been trafficked, you know, to somewhere else. And they went, oh, no, this doesn't happen on this island. Apparently it does, because we've read since that it does happen. You know, it's like, have you done this and have you done that? And they're just like, yeah, well, yeah. And then anytime we did get any messages back from them, or I got emails back from them, it was like, oh, we're still waiting for information to come back.
In fact, the more time that Brenda spent on the island, the more she felt like there was a conspiracy of silence surrounding her daughter's disappearance.
So we got the ferry over and we went into 420 Centre to see if there was anybody there that we could ask. Were you there at the time they were there? You know, there was only the barman there. So we said to him, were you here? Told him who we were and was he here on the night? And he said, oh, no, I wasn't here. He said, but the boss is out the back. I'll go and get him. Anyway, he came back and he says, oh, he's busy, he's on the phone. I said, that's no problem, I'll wait. And he went and he came back and he says, he's not prepared to speak to you. I was like, okay. I wasn't even necessarily going to ask him lots of questions. I just wanted him to know who we were.
Brenda wanted to go to the bay where her daughter was last seen and leave a tribute to her. On the way, she passed outside a shop from which she heard the sound of a wind chime.
It sounded, which made me cry actually, it sounded like mermaid. When you see mermaids on the TV, I know they're not real, but you hear that sound, and that's what it sounded like. Because I think of Sama the mermaid. She's swimming the island, she's swimming around the ocean. Anyway, so I went in the shop and I spoke to the lady. She was all nice and polite. I didn't say who I was. So anyway, I came out and I'd made a reef. So I love knitting and crocheting. So I made a reef which was ocean friendly. I made sure I took out wires and all sorts because she was well into, you know, the ocean animals. And her father and I put it into the water and it kept on washing back to our feet. So we were laughing a bit. So I just got hold of it and I frisbed it, like a frisbee across the ocean, out. And it went out and we just watched it until it disappeared out of sight. In the meantime, the British consul and the vice consul were with us as well, because they'd come to the meetings. And we sat on the beach for a little while, myself and Sam's father. And then we walked back to the others, and the British consul, the lady, she said that she'd gone in the shop to get a few little souvenirs for me to take back for the guys and postcards and things. And she mentioned to the woman in the shop, who'd been very nice to me, she mentioned to the woman in the shop who we were, and the woman then shut up and would not say another thing. All she kept on saying was yes, no, yes, no. And even the vice consul, the consul said that was really strange.
Brenda, along with many of Sam's loved ones, are now in a WhatsApp group. They call themselves the Mermaids in honour of Sam.
So that we could all be in contact and pass on our, you know, information, messages, anything, just love and thanks.
It's just testament to the person she was and the person she is that there's just so many people that have just kind of rallied round into this. You know, no one wants to do this job, right? That's what we always said to ourselves. No one wants this job. It's the job from hell. But, you know, everyone from different skill sets and different part of her life just really come together just to do everything they possibly couldn't and are still doing it 3 years later.
And they have no intention of stopping their work until the mystery of what happened to Sam on that night in March 2021 is solved.
We've really wanted and continue to want the boat to be searched. I know it's 3 years, but you know, we still think there could be if, and I say it's a massive if, there is any evidence on that boat. The authorities still have Sam's iPad, still have her phone. We've asked for those things to be returned because, you know, we assume you have everything off them by now. So therefore, you know, can we have those things back? No, because it's an active investigation. Well, what will it take now to move to the next step in that investigation? You know, if you hear some of the things that the US FBI police have said since that point, they didn't do it right from the first stage. And they've admitted that from the first minute, they didn't take the right steps. And had they taken the right steps, that boat would have probably been searched and that interview would have probably happened. But it's fine to look back at that in hindsight. But the first 24 hours didn't go well from a police investigative perspective. And those 24 hours are now lost and we'll never get them back. There's hundreds of possibilities that could have happened that you could play this out if she fell off the boat. But we'll never know that now because the person who could have given us that opportunity put the barriers up, instructed a lawyer pretty much about the same time that he was calling the Coast Guard, which is suspicious in itself, and stonewalled the police and has done so for the last 2.5, 3 years.
Brenda doesn't know what she would have done if she didn't have the mermaids by her side.
And they have been absolutely life-saving. They're my friends, they're my family, and I love every one of them. They have helped me through so much. They've been there when I've laughed, they've been there when I've cried, and that's been a lot. We've met up socially, we've met up for meetings, you know. And what we did, her dad and I, we had a plaque done, and it's on a bench in Southampton, right on the waterfront, and it was dedicated to the mermaids. So it says, dedicated to the mermaids, and then Sam's name and a little message, because I love them so much and I want them to know that.
She remains hopeful that one day she will find out what happened to Sam.
If there's anybody out there that knows anything, I'm the mother of that girl that's gone missing. And I'm broken. I'm trying so hard to be positive and strong. But I need to know where my daughter is. And I want to bring her home.
Were you in St. John on the night of March the 7th? Perhaps you were in the area near Franks Bay in the early hours of the morning of March the 8th. Did you see or hear anything suspicious? If so, we want to hear from you. In many cases, it takes just one piece of information to lead police and family to the answers they crave. Your information could be vital. Visit our website, themissingpodcast.org, where you'll find more information on this and every other case we featured in the series. On our site, you can join the conversation and help with the investigation. There's a dedicated forum, moderated carefully by Locate, where you can get updates on the case, share your theories, and discuss the facts with real investigators from Locate International. The series is also made with the help of Missing People, a charity who offers support to the families of the missing. Their helpline is open to offer support and advice if you've been affected by anything in this episode. We can't say this enough. It takes just one person with the right information to solve any of the cases in this series. Brenda hopes that the information will soon arrive to solve this one. The Missing is a What's the Story original podcast series. It's presented by me, Pandora Sykes. The episode was produced, written and edited by Jack O'Kennedy. The executive producers for What's the Story Sounds are Daryl Brown and Sophie Ellis.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This season, we're launching a new episode of The Missing every week. But if you don't want to wait, you can listen to them exclusively on What's the Story Crime. Just search for What's the Story Crime in Apple Podcasts or follow the link in our show notes to get access on whatever platform you prefer to listen on. All the information is also available on www.whatsthestorysounds.com/crime.